Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch now with Stephen Esposito, the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management. Stephen, welcome back, and let's talk a little bit about inflation.
Well, thank you for having me back. Well, we got an excuse for the market to pull back here. It's been a good first quarter, and I think we needed a little frothiness was in the market. We needed a pullback, and we got it today.
Yeah.
Numbers that came out were not where the experts had predicted they were, and the market's looking for an excuse, and it got it today.
Now, let's see. Steve just did the numbers, but what are we off right now? Do you have it in front of you by any chance?
Well, we're looking at the Dow down about 140, but the Russell 2000 is what's getting hit the hardest, the broader. The 2000 down almost 1.75 points today. So I would actually look at that area for some opportunity. If we continue to pull back this week and the next week, I think there's some good opportunities to get in for later this year.
I'm one of those guys that just wishes that the Fed's target was 3, not 2, even 2.5, you know?
You know what? We talked earlier in the year, and I felt rates would come down by the end of the year by 100 basis points. I'm still going to go with that, maybe 75. Either way, 75 or 100, it's 601 has to know the other. I think the market will react positively, and the economy in the second half will react positively as well. And I think you'll see investors making some money. It's just in the tech sector, we had this really frothy market and some crazy moves to the upside, and you're seeing a pullback. And it's nothing to worry about. I love pullbacks. I love when the markets are down. It gives me opportunity to bargain hunt. And
yeah,
That's what we're doing.
You think NVIDIA is fairly priced?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm worried about a lot of pull forward order coming into them, like we had in the past with other companies where they were, during COVID, they were doubling the orders, and then all of a sudden the orders were cut. And I'm worried about that. I'd like the technology in general. I'm not talking about the specific company, but the technology. And I think there's going to be some opportunities in here shortly, I think, to buy some of those names and deploy them if you don't have them. But there's been one heck of a run. And one thing I don't like to do is chase companies. I'd rather just wait for the timing and be patient and see if they come into my price. If they don't, I don't buy them. I go to the next one.
Hmm. Talk to me about all the expert evaluations and predictions that we've heard so far this year.
Well, I think it's consistent. I mean, like today, for example, we had all these predictions that everybody was sitting there waiting, and then it came in nowhere close. And this is pretty common. If you look back on the jobs numbers a month ago, remember we had 350,000 gains and they weren't looking for that. And then what happened a month later when they said the next month, they revised it down from 350 down to 229. I mean, the fact that the markets react so violently in either direction, if we're off a little bit by the base number, and the base number is rarely ever right, as we saw again today. And that's what I think is kind of ridiculous. As an investor, I wouldn't do that. I would look at the long-term trend rather than did we beat or do worse than the number and have this violent reaction. Look at it as an opportunity. Look at it as an opportunity to buy when the markets overreact. And if the markets overreact on the upside, look for a reason to get out. But I think this focus is ridiculous and it should stop.
Yeah.
It's not going to.
Well,
Well,
yeah. And now I'm going to ask you a question that is actually one of those kinds of questions. But I mean, the inflation rate number right now is what? We're at 3.4, is it? What's inflation at right now?
Right in that number, depending on, if you're looking back 6 months or 12 months, what have you. But it's coming down. It is coming down. You're seeing unemployment go up a little bit. I'm not saying that's good, but if you're looking at the economy, I think personally, my personal opinion is 4 to 4.5% unemployment is nirvana. But right now, there's a lot of moving parts in the marketplace, and it's hard for the government to actually record them every month and track the exact number and assume it's accurate. So just look at the trend I would look at, and I think things are getting better across the board. And yes, a lot of items in inflation, look at commodity prices I've talked about. Many of them are way down from where they were a year ago, and that for some reason isn't translating into the inflation numbers. I think it will, but I think it's a 6-month lag.
Should I get an ETF?
I think the second half will be a good market, the second half of the year.
Should I get an ETF in some sort of commodity or something like that?
I don't know if that's going to be the case. I think the commodity prices were way overdone during COVID, obviously short supply, and I think now the reality is coming back in again to where they really should be, and I think that'll eventually play through to the inflation numbers. unfortunately, not heavily weighted as they should be in the index, but that's a story for another day. But in general, I think you're going to see it. I think you'll see prices start to come down and the markets will react accordingly. The Fed will react and it becomes a domino effect. So if this market continues to pull back, I'd look at is it a buying opportunity, which is what we're going to be doing, and then looking for the second half of the year by year end to be a much better market. And one stat that people will like, if you go back, the last time an incumbent president, no matter what party they were in, was running for re-election, in the last 16 elections in that year, the market's been up. So they're 16 for 16, and I think I'll go with that for this year as well.
Stephen Esposito is the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest, YellowstoneWM.com. Thanks, Stephen. We'll talk again.
Thank you.
The Internet Authority, the Gadget Authority, is Bree Fowler, the senior writer at CNET and CNET.com. Hi, Bree. Welcome back.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
This TikTok thing is amazing to me. How close are we to banning TikTok in the USA?
Well, the House passed a bill that would basically do that unless TikTok, the company that owns TikTok, is able to sell it off to a buyer that the U.S. is okay with.
Yeah. What, like Meta? Like we trust them?
Well, I think a lot of the issues with some of the big tech companies in the U.S. is you run into antitrust concerns as well because they're already so big. So, yeah, it's a real question as to who would want and be able to afford and be able to get regulatory approval for this kind of sale.
It's funny if the Senate sets them up for that and then says, no, you can't buy them, you'll be too big. Is the Senate going to pass this?
Well, it's really unclear. There hasn't been a lot of enthusiasm. They haven't, you know, jumped on it. I mean, the House passed this overwhelmingly on a bipartisan basis, which is kind of shocking looking at Congress these days in general. But, you know, Chuck Schumer, who kind of sets the agenda, has been kind of lukewarm about whether he wants to bring this to the floor or not.
Is it maybe the precedent? I mean, so now the U.S. government is deciding maybe something about internet platforms that they don't want to be doing that. The Congress does not want to be keeping score on this sort of thing.
Yeah, and a lot of people who the representatives that voted against it cited free speech issues. You're singling out one company and one app because of perceived ties to a hostile state, to the Chinese government, to the Chinese Communist Party. You know, you can debate whether there's a national security concern or not, but it's really hard, and it does set a precedent that I think a lot of people don't necessarily want to set.
Bree, how legitimate are those concerns, though?
Yeah, security experts say that, you know, TikTok, it does suck up mass amounts of data. Just really, you know, you think, well, what's the harm? My kid's posting, you know, stupid little dances and things like that, but when you do that, you know, whoever is picking up that data is seeing the inside of your home. They're seeing, you know, what towns look like. You know, it's just so much data that could be analyzed. And the Chinese government definitely has the capability to take that data and use it for intelligence purposes. Now, TikTok claims that they don't give data to the Chinese government, but, you know, China's not a democracy. If the government decides they want it, TikTok may not be able to say no.
Yeah, I'm on board that ship. I don't trust this organization because even if I trust the organization, if they're in China, if ByteDance is owned by a company in China, then I don't trust the Chinese government. So I think that's troubling. But I'm wondering if you could just talk to me a little bit about how how damaging the data would be, and really what would they be acquiring? Like when I sign up for something, I have a username and a password. My credit card information isn't on my TikTok account, is it? Identity theft is something we're all dealing with. TikTok would be no different than that. Maybe they see the interior of our home as we're dancing, but I can't imagine that has any value to anybody. Give me a scenario where this is actually a threat.
It's a little less cut and dry. I mean, no one really cares about credit card numbers anymore, Social Security numbers even. It's not that big of a deal, but it's about maybe that they know that you're connected to other people or, you know, a target in the U.S. government. They know who their friends and family are. They know where they live. They know where they go. It's definitely a haystack, and they're looking for needles, but it's something that they definitely can handle. Now, you know, free speech and tech rights advocates would say the Chinese government and pretty much anybody can buy all of this data from data brokers, which get it from social media. And this is all data that people are willingly posting. I mean, we're not talking about credit card numbers and things that you try to keep safe and private. We're talking about things that, you know, you think just aren't a big deal and that people share all the time. And, you know, it's more than just the Chinese government too. Hackers, identity theft, you know, especially now that we have AI to do a lot of the heavy lifting, this data becomes that much more valuable.
Yeah. Well, you're right. Now that you mention it, with AI and supercomputing, I suppose they really could find the needles in the haystack. Just give me the headline on Waymo in Los Angeles. Today, they have robo-taxis, driverless cars zipping around L.A. today?
Yeah, they have those cars zipping around L.A. About 50,000 people have signed up for the driverless ride-hailing service. It's in existence in other places. It's been in L.A. for a while now and kicked off in Phoenix in 2020. And now it's expanding to L.A.
That's amazing. I do not want to get into one of those things, but maybe it'll be safe. Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET. We'll talk again another day. Thanks for your insight, Bree.
Thanks a lot.
Dale Buss joins us now, the veteran financial journalist, the founder and executive director of something called the Flyover Coalition, which is a coalition and interest in businesses and flyover land, which is where we are. Dale is also a contributing editor to Food Technology Magazine, and that's published right here in Chicago. Dale, welcome back to the show. I hope you're doing well.
Thanks, John. I am. And what could be more flyover than the food business, right?
What do you mean by that? Corn and beans are grown here, right?
And foods are developed, concocted, manufactured. And that's what we're going to talk about today, right, is the impact on this business from weight loss drugs.
Okay, so we're talking about Ozempic and Wegovy and things like that, right?
Yep. This class of drugs is, everybody knows about it, right? You can't ignore the TV ads that use the tune to magic, right? Ozempic. And these drugs have absolutely taken off in the marketplace, and they are just posing a huge development for not only for the food business, but for all sorts of companies. So the food business is confronted with the notion that people aren't going to be wanting to consume all the empty calories and snacks that they have gotten used to in the American diet. So companies like Kraft Heinz and ConAgra and Heinz and Mondelez are all trying to figure out, well, what's going to be the impact of these weight loss drugs on the appetite and the diminished appetite that people are going to have for, you know, let's call it junk food, right? So for low nutrient dense products. It's gotten to the point where Oprah Winfrey, one of Chicago's own, decided not only to leave the board of Weight Watchers International, which she joined several years ago, but also to divest her stake in the company because she used to subscribe to the Weight Watchers philosophy, which is it's all about your willpower, right? But last fall, she admitted, well, I've been taking weight loss drugs. They're effective. I've changed my mind about them. And so, you know, logically and ethically, I guess she concluded that she no longer could be a good board member for the company or even own its stock, even though Weight Watchers has kind of diversified a little bit into an online company that will provide these drugs. But it's not just the food companies. It's every company that's got employee benefits now is having to be faced with the possibility that there's greater demand for paying for the benefit of weight loss drugs by their employees. And these can cost, you know, $900, $1,100 a month, which is a huge new cost to companies. And so these weight loss drugs have gotten, you know, they've done the apple cart upset thing to all of industry, really, and a lot of people kind of handicapping this market say they could become as big a deal as, you know, blood pressure drugs did several years ago. So there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, but when the blood pressure drugs came out, I can't imagine anybody that would have suffered as a result. But with, now that you mention it, say Ozempic, if that means we're going to eat a lot less Cheetos, then maybe that's bad news for the people that make Cheetos. Although, do they really think that the impact will be that dramatic on the American diet that they'll actually see a noticeable decrease in sales?
Yes, they do. And yeah, you've had warnings about this even as far back as last fall. People like the CEO of Walmart were saying, yeah, we're noticing an impact on our food sales, and the empty calories aren't being sold at as high a pace as they were.
Okay.
And you've got companies like Nestle and Kraft Heinz and Kellogg saying that these are going to impact dietary behaviors. We're trying to monitor the impact. We're trying to maybe come up with product differentiation that would address this. For example, they're considering even more experiments with smaller package sizes so that, okay, I may still want my Oreos, but I don't want as many Oreos. Okay. You know, maybe I'll buy Oreos in smaller packages. So, yeah, it really is having a profound effect already. And there are people who predict that, you know, we've only seen the beginning of it.
Boy, I think that sounds like shrinkflation to me, but I mean, I don't know that you are saying, are you, that this is necessarily a bad thing? I mean, it's bad for these businesses, but I presume overall it's good for America if people are getting thinner and healthier.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, the jury is still out really on the long-term impact, because a lot of people warn, and there are some people who have been on these drugs who say that, you know, it's a lifetime commitment. If you go off of Ozempic, you're going to go right back to where you were before.
Sure.
The weight, the appetite, the metabolism. So if people can stick on these things for years and even decades, then, you know, clearly it's going to have a positive impact on the, let's say, the obesity rate and maybe the overall health of the country. But I guess that's kind of the question, is can people do it? Will people do it? Are there after effects or long-term effects that aren't yet evident? I think all that stuff is, you know, still very much in play. But yeah, there's no reason to think that this isn't a net positive in terms of the health of the American people, for sure.
Are these companies talking, Dale, about making better versions of their products? Don't give me fewer Oreo cookies. Find a way to make an Oreo cookie that isn't as bad or addictive as the current batch.
Yeah, I think all things are on the table for these companies. I mean, certainly the last decade or so has prompted even the big CPG companies to say, we need to develop better for you products, or we need to, you know, address the fact the American people want more nutritional value in what they eat. But, you know, on the other hand, you're not seeing Coca-Cola or, you know, PepsiCo affected all that much, and nobody's not buying Fritos. I mean, it's the consumption is just all over the place. And while there has been pressure to come up with better for you products, maybe this whole weight loss drug thing will put even more pressure on the companies to say, you know, maybe Oreo's not going to be the growth business it has been for decades and decades, and we can only come up with so many varieties. You know, you can only sell so many packages of green cream Oreos for St. Patrick's Day or whatever, now that people are on weight loss drugs and just simply don't have the appetite for all these kinds of things. So I think we're just really at the beginning of seeing how this is all going to play out.
They're not actively fighting this, are they? Are the food companies, you know, pushing back, or are they just accepting this as an inevitable and, like you said, positive wave for America?
Yeah, I think they're accepting it as inevitable. I mean, for one thing, this is a European company, Novo Nordisk, that's behind both Ozempic and Wegovy. Eli Lilly has a drug. I think Mounjaro is Lilly's. It's not as if the food industry is saying, wait, you know, there's a problem with these drugs, don't take them. They really can't say that. I mean, kind of the worst that anybody can say is, as I said, if you go off of them, you'll go right back to where you were, and the cost. And so I think if the food companies want to fight this, you know, there may be some points that they can use. But right now, this is all hit with such force and impact that they're still pretty much just scrambling to figure out not only what to do, but, you know, really what it means. What does all this mean?
You said in your piece here, I'm just reading, that Morgan Stanley now predicts that this new group of weight loss medications will become pharmaceutical blockbusters worth a collective $54 billion by 2030. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing.
And, yeah, it's big.
And maybe not surprising, just given all of the talk. And I don't know if the price of these drugs comes down. Maybe that makes them more accessible to people. Does that hurt the bottom line of those companies? Or if, you know, maybe they almost want to keep them as expensive as they are because there is an insatiable appetite, no pun intended, for them. But $54 billion, that's amazing.
Yeah, well, that's certainly where the pharmaceutical industry economics come into play. And, you know, there's a lot of complaints about the cost of all drugs, but there are already complaints about the cost of Ozempic and Mounjaro and, you know, will there be generic alternatives emerge, that sort of thing. So that's the whole other side of it, not just the food side, but what actually happens is as this market continues to mature and grow.
Mm. I'm glad you're following this. Let's continue to talk about this. Another day, Dale Buss, the veteran financial journalist, the founder and executive director of the Flyover Coalition, and he's also a contributing editor to Food Technology Magazine. They produce that here in Chicago. Dale, nice to talk to you today.
All right. Thank you.
More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The stalled Lincoln Yards project in Chicago could be revived if a Florida real estate developer gets involved. Cranes reports the developer recently met with Chicago planning officials to discuss the project. Kane Anderson Real Estate could bankroll the project and partner with lead developer Sterling Bay on the Northside Mega Project. Sterling Bay has been searching for a financial partner for nearly a year. The site is located between Lincoln Park and Bucktown. The plan calls for a mix of offices, retail, and residential units. The development could create thousands of jobs. The former Museum of Broadcast Communications building in Chicago is on the market and may be poised for redevelopment. The building at 360 North State is being marketed for sale or lease by its current owner, Fern Hill. Plans for the building haven't been disclosed, but it will remain commercial. The four-story office and retail building is vacant and includes about 51,000 square feet of space. The Museum of Broadcast Communications closed in the spring of 2023. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, and look who's on the phone. It's the Big O.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm doing well, Orion, thank you. It's great to hear your voice, and thanks for jumping on to help us celebrate the birthday of Paul Wallum.
If I had a brother, Paul would be it. Because we are the same age.
90?
Yes.
Wow. You've got your 90th coming up at the end of the month.
31st of March.
Well, we'll talk about that as the big day gets closer. But Paul's on the phone. He's got some things to say about how farm equipment has changed over your lifetimes.
Oh, yeah. And he is the guy to talk to.
As did you. Paul grew up on a farm. You became a farm broadcasting legend. He was an exec at International Harvester and then was an IH dealer.
Yes.
What he saw at the big National Machinery Show in Louisville last month.
Oh, it's incredible.
After I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today, there's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Happy birthday, Paul.
Thank you.
Yeah, you started out this life on a farm. Where?
Outside Ransom, Illinois, which is near Streeter.
And as was the case with Orion, there was no electricity on that farm.
He got it before I did. In 1943, I'll never forget with my sisters running around that night, turning light switches on and off.
And when you were a boy, how was corn planted, Paul?
Well, Dad had a two-row planter. He planted behind horses.
Now, planters can sweep dozens of rows at a time, and I thought it would be fun to hear someone with Paul's 90 years of perspective, what he saw at the National Machinery Show in Louisville. Which is huge, by the way, isn't it?
27 acres under roof. I was lost the whole time. It's like a big old toy store.
Yeah, with very expensive toys.
A new combine, about $1 million.
Oh, boy. Tell us more about what you saw.
The items that 5 years ago showed up at the shows as futuristic are there this year in production. Autonomous tractors, electric tractors, everything from irrigation to tillage to planting, It's just moving very rapidly.
In his retirement, Paul is a writer. 5 books, a few of them about International Harvester, and you can check those out at paulwallum.com.
Happy birthday, Paul, and many, many more we'll celebrate together.
Thank you. 90 has come quite quickly, it seems.
That is true. Yes.
On the food calendar, it's National Potato Chip Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Don Evans now, Marketing Director at the International Housewares Association. A big show at McCormick Place starting March 19th. Welcome to the show, Don. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you. And yes, we are looking forward to starting it. We actually start on this Sunday, March 17th. So lucky for you, it's St. Patrick's Day. So yes, we are looking to kick off on Sunday the 17th through the 19th. So 3 full days there.
What are housewares? Describe for me some of the products or topics.
Absolutely. So it's, think of everything you have in every room of your home. Even outside the home, as we bring kind of entertaining experiences outdoors, but we're talking about kitchen electrics, gadgets, kitchen tools and gadgets, home environment, cookware, bakeware, even storage and organization, cleaning products, even pet supplies. You're going to find all of that on the floors of McCormick Place this weekend.
Is there a trend, a hot product, a hot area right now?
There's a lot of trends, and we like to capture all of them, but really the big one that's kind of taking hold from last year as well, still going into this year, is still around at-home entertaining. So we're all still looking to bring people in our homes and kind of show off the skills that we learned a couple of years ago, but tenfold now. So at-home entertaining is here to stay. It's become the norm, really.
At-home entertaining, meaning cooking, serving, having a party, hosting a dinner, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think what we're finding is that occasions aren't just, you know, you have the typical occasions that you bring people into your home for, but we're really seeing other occasions, special occasions, things like Galentine's Day, you know, things that people are kind of making celebration of every day, and they are not shy about bringing people in the home, prepping a great dinner, using all of these kind of new fancy products they have, and also serving them. And interestingly enough, we're finding the biggest thing people are concerned about is their cleanup. And 95% of people are planning to send food home with their guests. So they're going to need products to actually send people home with all that great food they've prepared. Mm.
And then get the lids to match those things afterwards. That's
absolutely. And in colors, too. I mean, it's not just, you know, what we typically think of as storage and organization. I mean, there are companies out there that are really leaning into some new color trends we're starting to see as well. So that's all. It all comes to life when you walk these floors.
Don, how many people are going to be at McCormick Place starting Sunday?
Oh, well, we have 500,000 square feet of exhibit space with 1,700 exhibitors. And with that comes thousands of retail buyers from the smaller kind of independent retailers all the way through mid-tier, and the large guys are going to be here as well. Really, and what we like to bring to the table, if you will, is purchase power. We are having these larger retailers are really bringing the ones that are the decision makers. So, you know, not only do we have the energy at the show floor itself and all these really cool products, but we have the right people in place to make the decisions, who's going to purchase it, and really what's going to affect retail shelves in the coming months and into the holiday season. Mm.
Don Evans is at theinspiredhomeshow.com. You can find out more at theinspiredhomeshow.com. I'm glad these big shows are back up and running and coming through Chicago, Don. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.